Coming up on Tech News Today, the specs on Google's specs, also Microsoft to bring back the start button, and Facebook and Twitter have different ways of annoying you with video. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This Tech News Today for Tuesday, April 16th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used Samsung Galaxy, iPhone, and other smartphones are worth at gazelle.com. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 20 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use offer code TNT4. And by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow, send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile by Citrix. Try ShareFile today. For a 30-day free trial, go to ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where Ayaz Akhtar has the day off, but he'll be back tomorrow.
Slacker.
But we're still going to tell you all about the top tech stories of the day, starting with the news views. HP needs to look relevant, and who better to partner with than a hot new startup like Leap Motion? The $80 Leap Motion device comes out mid-May and is already headed to Asus PCs. Starting this summer, Leap Motion will be bundled in with HP devices and then come embedded in some devices soon after. Leap's COO Andy Miller told CNET they can embed Leap Motion into anything from a phone to a PC.
Google's announced specs for the Glass Explorer editions of Google Glass, and there's some goodies in here like 5-megapixel camera, 720p video, 16 gigabytes of storage. Now, Glass is only going to use the slower 802.11b and g Wi-Fi bands, but also has Bluetooth connectivity. And Google says the display will be like a 25-inch HD screen about 8 feet away. Oh, and a full day of battery life? Could it be?
Bloomberg reports Twitter is close to striking a deal with Viacom and NBC to host clips from TV shows, sell ads alongside them. Twitter has existing partnerships with ESPN, The Weather Channel, and Turner Broadcasting. Former News Corp COO Peter Chernin joined Twitter's board in November to help the company strike more media partnership deals.
Hey, Windows 8 users, do you wish you could boot straight to the desktop and bring back that start button? Supposedly, neither were actually in the original plan for Blue, but reports from a couple different forums hinted Microsoft might actually be moving toward allowing users to skip booting into the Metro-style start menu and instead start their PCs in desktop mode. Now, Mary Jo Foley says her sources are confirming that this indeed looks like the deal, and also said Microsoft is considering bringing back that start button.
I'm bringing start button back.
Yeah. Kostanowski's gone. Netflix announced it will drop Silverlight in favor of an HTML5 solution for its streaming video. Netflix has already started using the HTML5 premium video extensions in Chrome on the Samsung ARM-based Chromebook. Microsoft is dropping support for Silverlight in 2021, so Netflix getting out ahead of that, looking for a more widely supported solution that could have the effect of making Netflix compatible with more platforms like Linux.
Facebook chat heads, which are already part of the home family of apps on Android, and they kind of hover over everything else, are going to be coming to the iOS application for Facebook this week. That's according to Facebook CTO Mike Schroepfer and Vice President of Mobile Engineering Corey Andreka. But while the social network is about to push the update to its iOS app that would add the whole floating chat head messaging experience to Apple devices, those heads will only work within the Facebook application. They're not going to appear over other apps like they do in the Android version.
Keep your heads in one place. Microsoft announced today it will match Amazon Web Services on-demand prices for its Windows Azure Cloud data services. That's a drop of 21 to 33% for Linux instances, but it's actually a bit of a rise for Windows instances. Amazon also still beats Microsoft on reserved instance pricing, though Microsoft says companies should negotiate a Microsoft Enterprise agreement for 20 to 32% discounts if they're serious about that kind of service.
Google Chairman Eric Schmidt thinks Google's Motorola unit is amazing stuff. In fact, that's a direct quote. He also said on stage at the D-Mobile conference today that they have, quote, a new set of products which are phenomenal and very, very impressive. In fact, it sounds so impressive that the new products need their own product category. And Schmidt's got it. He says, think of it as phones plus.
Plus what? No. Rest easy, Nokia. Microsoft isn't going to steal your market for phones away. Not yet, anyway. Windows Phone VP Terry Myerson told the crowd at D-Dive into Mobile that he doesn't see the need for Microsoft to build a Windows phone of its own. Myerson said if Microsoft were to make a phone, it would have to be something that one of the company's primary partners like Nokia or HTC wasn't providing, and he doesn't see that happening. He also took some time to call Android a mess and claim Google is trying to quash Facebook Home.
A Sony-backed ISP in Japan has launched a 2 gigabit per second internet service with 1 gigabit upload speed, which is the world's fastest, at least for home use. SoNet Entertainment began offering its Neuro fiber-based service yesterday in Tokyo and 6 surrounding prefectures. It'll cost about 4,980 yen, which is equivalent to about $51 per month on a 2-year contract, plus a 52,500 yen installation fee that it's currently offering for free for those that apply online.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Gazelle. Do you want that new Samsung Galaxy S4 or maybe the HTC One or even an iPhone 5 still? Before you upgrade, make sure you sell your used phone for cash to Gazelle right now. Find out how much you can get at gazelle.com today. And you may say, well, wait, Tom, I'm not ready to let go of my phone. I would like to sell it to Gazelle, but I need a month to figure this stuff out. We'll still go lock in your quote today because that's what Gazelle does. You go to G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com, find your item, tell them the condition. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads. Get a risk-free offer for your gadgets, and then you lock that quote in for 30 days. So you've got 30 days that quote is good. They'll honor that price for up to 30 days, risk-free, while you figure out what you're going to do with your new phone. Get that data off there. Buy that new phone. Then once you send it to them, you get paid fast by check, PayPal, or get an extra 5% with an Amazon gift card. Go to gazelle.com right now. Get an offer for your Samsung iPhone, HTC or BlackBerry smartphones, your iPad, other Apple products. But do it today because you got 30 days to send it to them, and they probably aren't going to get more valuable over time. That's just usually not the way it works. Get paid in cash, risk-free right now. What's your iPhone, Samsung, and other Android smartphone worth? Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com to find out. Sell your used Samsung Galaxy or iPhone today at gazelle.com, and we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Go do it. Get some easy cash. Joining us today to help make some sense out of the tech news, freelance writer and analyst Lloyd Case of uncertainty.com. Welcome back to the show, Lloyd. Good to have you, man.
Hi. Good to be here.
Let's kick off the show talking a little bit about specs on specs. Google Glass released an API yesterday and also put up a user guide, which has the official specs for the Explorer glasses. Those are the ones they're giving out to a bunch of people who applied. They still have to buy them, but I think Father Robert got a pair of these on their way. They're hitting the manufacturing floor today, according to Eric Schmidt. They got a 5-megapixel camera, 720p video, 12 gigabytes of usable storage. That's 16 gigabytes of onboard storage, 4 of it's taken up with operating system stuff. Only 802.11b and g, not n, probably for power consumption purposes, maybe the size of the chip. They will have Bluetooth, a bone conduction transducer. That's how you hear things. The display is the equivalent, you know, because it's projected on your eyes, the equivalent of 25-inch HD screen at 8 feet. They promise a full day of battery, and they do provide a micro USB cable and a charger. And they say the Bluetooth will work with any phone, but with Android, you can get the My Glass app, and that allows you to handle things like GPS and SMS. Lloyd, you didn't get lucky enough to be one of the explorers,
no.
Did you?
No,
are
I didn't.
Are you jealous?
But, not that much. I mean, I'm looking at this one spec that says equivalent to a 25-inch HD display at 8 feet. I don't know if you've looked at a 25-inch screen at 8 feet, but it's not very large, actually.
It sounds small to me. You're right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like almost like having a – you're having – your glasses, and you have like a little heads-up, tiny little heads-up display in one corner or something. It doesn't seem very useful to me at this point. I mean, I think it's going to evolve over time, but this first version is really very early adopter stuff.
Yeah, it is, and it's going to be for notifications. So, I guess you can watch some video on your eyes, but I imagine that's probably not what most people are going to use it for. How do these
cars sound? You figure that video screen, I mean, any bigger, and then you're getting into a point where it's too distracting if you're actually wearing these glasses.
That's true. If you're driving or something like that. Right. I'm just kind of curious to also the effect on privacy. I mean, everybody carries around cell phone cameras now, and now they'll be completely ubiquitous if you have a lot of people wandering around with cameras built in their glasses or whatever. So it'll be interesting to see the reaction to that.
I want to know how it handles Bluetooth with other phones, like what it does. Is it just allow you to hear the call? Is it sort of a glorified in-ear, you know, Bluetooth speaker? Or because the GPS and the SMS only work with the MyGlass app, apparently, I would wonder what else it can do.
Yeah, I mean, would you have access to any of your settings? You know, is there anything that you could be? Yeah, if it's just a sort of like, oh, you can take a call, you can hang up, you can, you know, maybe adjust some volume type of a thing. That's okay. You know, that's sort of the beginning step for a Bluetooth connectivity, but there's so much more that you would assume should be possible with something like this if we're going to be wearing these glasses. I also think the full day of battery is key. They're saying, sure, you'll get a full day of battery, but let's see. Are you going to get a full day of battery, you know, talking on the phone here and there? What happens when you run quite a bit of video for an extended period of time? Because, again, this is out and about. There's no convenient way to charge anything that you're wearing. So yeah, that's important too.
But when you think about it, I mean, they're packing all of this into a pair of glasses. And I know it has a little hang down thing for the camera, but it's hard to know what to compare this to. I mean, maybe that 25-inch HD screen at 8 feet is perfect. Maybe that's exactly what you need if you're just doing some Google Hangouts and checking your text messages. I guess that's sort of what the Explorer program is about, is finding out how good these are. But 720p video, 12 gigabytes of storage. I mean, I those SD cards are getting, you know, more and more capacity on them. So conceivable that doesn't take up a lot of space here. But so, Lloyd, are you underwhelmed by the specs overall?
No, I think it's a very interesting product. I just think it's a little early. And then, of course, somebody like me who wears glasses regularly, I kind of want a prescription version if I had one. But I think it's a very interesting device, and it'll be interesting to see how people use it. I think a lot of these kinds of devices, it'll be somewhat unpredictable as to how the usage model will actually try out.
I imagine Google is in exactly the same position where they, I guess Eric Schmidt said it's become very normal on the Google campus in Mountain View for people to wear these, but that's right. Inside baseball. They will learn a lot of use cases having these out and about in the world. And I'm assuming that's why they're doing it this way, is to see what people actually will do with them when they're not Google employees and they're just allowed to do whatever they want.
Yep.
Let's talk about video ads coming to annoy you on more social networks.
Oh, yeah. So this is sort of a Facebook and sort of a Twitter story because they both got some video stuff coming down the pipe that's either going to be interesting to you or sound really annoying depending on whether or not you're in advertising. So Facebook is apparently shopping the idea of companies buying really expensive video ad slots. So this is sort of Facebook goes around, shows how potentially an ad might look to a variety of agencies, and they're looking to lock down commitments for slots in June and July. This is according to executives that have been briefed on the product who were speaking to Ad Age. Believed to be autoplay ads, so that those are the ads that play, you know, once you open a page, whether you want it to or not. Ooh. Presented in a video player that apparently will expand beyond the main news feed, cover the right and left-hand rails. I mean, be absolutely front and center. Can't miss it. On the desktop version, though, the mobile version, it's displayed a little bit differently, so kind of remains to be seen how it would roll out. The idea, though, is to sell 4 daily summer slots. Okay, and then the large demographics, and these are very somewhat vague, is women over and under 30, and then men over and under 30. 15-second ads. Supposedly, the frequency would be capped so that I don't see more than 3 ads per day and get so annoyed that I stop using Facebook. But the big thing is here is $1 million per ad. So this is according to an executive. Potentially, if you've got 4 ad slots a day, you're potentially bringing in $4 million per day from those ads. Now, that, of course, assumes that the ads would always be sold out. But this could be, you know, really lucrative place for companies who've got some deep advertising pockets.
Lloyd,
what do you think? Is this sort of the inevitable future of Facebook? Is this where they should be spending a lot of their efforts trying to make some big bucks?
I don't know. My tendency would be to close the web browser as soon as something like that popped out. I'm kind of curious as to how they're going to handle mobile devices. You know, you run the Facebook app already, and the second thing you typically see in your Facebook app is a giant ad. And are they going to make it video, which eats more into your bandwidth, which some people, you know, pay a lot of money for? So it'll be interesting to see how they handle the mobile side as well.
I think Facebook is at that point. This looks to me at that point that a lot of websites get to, where the temptation and the pull from their advertising clients starts to impair their judgment of what's best for their users. And Facebook has not had a great track record in that area already on its own. Now you're going to autoplay ads at me in my timeline, in my newsfeed, that so many people are already upset that you mess with and they don't understand why certain things pull up at certain points. You're going to autoplay video at me? I mean, video ads targeted at me arguably wouldn't be a bad thing if I was getting things I like movie trailers or whatever. But autoplay never is popular with people. I see that having a big negative.
This is a little bit of a 180 since, if you think about, I think it was May of last year, General Motors sort of publicly said, we're not going to advertise on Facebook anymore because Facebook doesn't want to give us a little bit more of a, you know, let us take over a page and do something really nice and splashy. We don't want to be constrained to that, you know, little ad spot in the right-hand rail. And took their advertising dollars away from Facebook. But GM is back, actually. They came back to Facebook last week. So, again, yeah, Tom, it's like you said. I mean, huge, huge advertisers who say, listen, just let us do a little bit something more. It would be hard for Facebook to always say no to something like that. I mentioned Twitter, too. Twitter, apparently, according to people familiar with the matter, is close to reaching partnerships with Viacom and Comcast to add video content and advertising to the Twitter sites, things like hosting TV clips and then selling ads alongside of them. This wouldn't be the first foray into video. Twitter already has partnerships with ESPN and the Weather Channel, Turner Broadcasting. But these new partnerships would potentially let Twitter stream more videos on its site and then split the ad revenue in some form with these networks. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I mean, I am so blissfully unaware of a lot of this stuff. You know, I think Twitter has a deal with ESPN. I'm not seeing anything like that. But that's because I'm very rarely on Twitter.com in order to see some of these inline videos and then subsequent ad buys as well.
And I think that's why Twitter's doing this right.
Is this something that you feel is part of Twitter already?
Twitter's doing it right. If you go, I had to search to find one of these today, but Twitter.com/ESPNCFB had one. That's their college football stream. And what it is you see a tweet, it has a link to a video, you click in, it drops down, you can play the video right there in the Twitter stream, and an ad plays before the video. That is so much less annoying. There's no autoplay, there's no throwing it in your face. You're right. Going after that content and you want to watch it. And a pre-roll video is annoying, sure, but it's not any more annoying than most of the videos we have to watch on the internet, unfortunately.
It's just having to force you to watch it thing that Facebook is trying. I think that's going to bite them in the long run.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is a good comparison of Twitter doing it right. Content you seek out and you want and you initiate the play button on, put an ad in front of that. Try to make some money off it. Fair enough. It's a free service. Yep. Facebook, getting in my face in my newsfeed. I don't even look at my newsfeed anyway, so I won't ever see it. let's talk about another company that is possibly listening to its users. The Verge reports Windows 8.1, also known as Windows Blue, will have an option to boot straight to the desktop, according to their sources. The references to a CAN-suppressed start screen have actually been found by a couple different sources in early builds of the Windows 8.1 registry, including My Digital Life forum. Mary Jo Foley says her sources bear that out. She said, yeah, Microsoft talking about that, also considering adding the start button back. But until it ships, anything can change, according to Mary Jo's sources. So they're considering both these things, but they haven't decided yet. Preview version goes live in June. Yesterday, ZDNet's Stephen J. Von Nichols declared Windows over, mostly because of the Metro screen and the annoyance of the tiles. What do you think, Lloyd? Is this Microsoft getting out from under Sinofsky and the things that he imposed on them? Is it simply responding to users and trying to save Windows 8, or is it all too late anyway?
Well, Microsoft's always been sort of into triangulation, right? So they throw something out there and people like it or not, and they try to improve it as best they can. I mean, if you remember going way back to the Windows 98 days, remember there were some complaints about Windows 98, so they came out with Windows 98 Second Edition, which fixed a lot of the problems people had. I should also note, however, that this registry entry existed in the beta versions of original Windows 8. And they took it out. So, but I wouldn't be a bit surprised if they put it back in and allowed people to do that. I wouldn't even be surprised if the start menu came back in some sort of reduced form to encourage people to use the new UI, but not force them to it.
Yeah, I mean, these are not big technical issues that cause them to force you to have to. And frankly, I use Windows 8. I just, when I boot it up, click the desktop, little black desktop button down in the bottom left every time and go right into my desktop. The Metro interface just doesn't even exist for me.
Same way. I mean, on a touch-enabled laptop, I have a Lenovo Yoga 13, and I keep Metro up for that. But on non-touch devices, I go right to the desktop. And I think that they need to accommodate users that do that, because there are still a ton of Windows 8 laptops selling without touchscreens, and it's kind of annoying to use that UI with those types of laptops.
My theory is that it was Sinofsky who was the one saying, no, we need to really drive them into the Metro interface or the Tile interface or whatever they're calling it these days. And now that he's gone, there's some arguments being won to say, like, look, people hate this. Give them the option at least. You can have a default to go to that Tile screen. Right. Give them a setting that they can turn on if they're like me on a desktop and don't need that Tile screen at all.
Right. I think a lot of users would be much happier if they did that. And you know, every OEM system I've looked at that comes with Windows comes with some kind of start menu substitute. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Yeah.
When I've reviewed systems, they all come with something like that.
The start button is just, that just seems weird. Just seems silly that it's not there. But I mean, when you hover down in the left, you do see a little start thing. That bothers me less and less over time. But the annoyance of having to go to the desktop tile to get to the desktop is just silly. Sarah, do you think that this could change momentum for Windows 8, or is Windows 8 just, you know, already lost the war for the public mind?
Well, I think it will be adding something that for better. I understand the whole, you know, Windows is let's do something different. Let's change it up. This is the evolution. But it was confusing to people. And, you know, maybe Sinofsky was part of this saying, we've got to change, and they don't know, the consumers don't know what they want yet, and they'll get used to it type of a thing. But people aren't used to it. So, yeah, I think that adding familiar areas of Windows back sort of seems like a little bit of a failure because they're having to backtrack. But no, I don't think that Windows is over because of this. I think that they're making the right moves. They've just got a lot of either confused or angry or just sort of people shaking their heads based on some of the changes that they've made. So, you know, what choice do they really have? I mean, if Steven Sinofsky was still at Microsoft, would they be holding their ground? I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, these are, you know, they gotta sell stuff, right? So it's what the people want.
Yeah. And this is the, you know, it's kind of a shortcut to analysis, but this is the off cycle for Microsoft. And they tend to do that. They tend to experiment a little more in the off cycle, and you get a Vista or you get a Windows Me. And, you know, so that's why Windows 7 is still sold. And I don't think this is the end for Windows. I think that's overdoing it, but I think Windows 8 is a big disappointment for Microsoft. It has to be. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor for today's show, Shutterstock.com. At Shutterstock, you'll find the perfect image or video. They have videos, too, for your next creative project, whether it's for your website, or you're doing a publication, an advertisement, a video, some other type of creative project. You can choose from over 20 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. And Shutterstock sources images from all around the world. Many contributors to Shutterstock are professional photographers and artists. That's what I like Shutterstock for, is when I'm looking for some high quality, concentrated quality of content, Shutterstock actually reviews each image individually for content quality before adding it to its library. Shutterstock adds 10,000 images every day, so every time you visit, you're going to find something new. I use it for It's a Thing. The podcast, the kind of just recreational podcast I do with Molly Wood, we always want a little image on the blog post that goes along with the episodes. I've been using Shutterstock, found great stuff. And their search engine is amazing. It sorts images by anything you can think of. Subject, asset type, gender, emotion, color spectrum. I know for designers, that's a big handy thing to have. And there's shareable light boxes. You can save image to a light box gallery, access them later so you can keep all the types of images together you want. You can even share those with team members. And there's the award-winning iPad app. Search on the go. Use it to display images during presentations. Shutterstock is a complete global offering. They're all over the world, places like China, Italy, Brazil, even Belgium. It's a true global marketplace. So you can try Shutterstock today by signing up for a free account. You don't need a credit card to try it. So just go shutterstock.com. Start an account. Begin using Shutterstock to help imagine what your next project would be like. Save some assets to your new light box. And then once you decide to purchase something, use the offer code TNT4 and new accounts will receive 30% off any package. That's shutterstock.com for 30% off new accounts. Use offer code TNT4. We thank Shutterstock for their support of Tech News Today. Got a few more things to talk about. Facebook Home not coming to the... wait, what? I thought we were getting chat heads. What's this about, Sarah?
Well, I mean, this is sort of Facebook Home, the way that it works on Android, right? Where it takes over the operating system. It's the first thing that you see, even in your lock screen. And it sort of hovers over whatever else you're doing. That's not going to be coming to the iOS experience. Although Facebook 6.0 for iOS is actually live now, which does integrate the chat head functionality, at least in Messenger. But again... It's not the sort of thing that is going to come to iPhone because of Apple's obviously very notorious closed down policy. A Facebook executive actually told Bloomberg yesterday that Facebook's in talks to bring Home to the iPhone as well as the Windows Phone platform. People went, well, you know, wow, maybe Facebook and Apple are actually going to make it all work. The Next Web reports that Facebook is not in talks with Apple or Microsoft about porting to Home again in the way that it works on Android. So yeah, I don't think there's a big surprise there. It's going to be integrated as much as that can be integrated the way that iOS works, at least for now. Speaking of iOS, actually, Piper Jaffray analyst Gene Munster wrote in an investor's note yesterday that low-cost iPhones, so that's sort of the next iPhone for, you know, developing countries and the sub $400 low-end smartphone market, that Apple may sell 75 million units in 2014, saying something like a $300 non-subsidized iPhone should be coming in September. So looking ahead for something that's launched before the holiday season to what it would look like next year, which would be, if you believe these numbers, a 30% cannibalization rate for Apple. But, you know, Apple tends to not care about that stuff too much as long as the bottom line works out. And if it plays out, Apple's share of the high-end smartphone market could dip to 37% next year. It was 43% last year. But then the low-end share would rise 11% in 2014 from nothing. I mean, right now, Apple's not part of the low-end smartphone market at all. Lloyd, what do you think is more important to Apple?
Well, I think they need to do something to make themselves seem relevant again. I mean, Android's been getting a ton of attention, particularly from all the really neat stuff recently released by Samsung and HTC. So I think that coming out with something low-end, you know, there's a ton of low-end smartphones sold with Android that people just use them as phones and don't always realize how smart they are or how useful they are for things other than making phone calls. And Apple would love to have a share of that market, I'm sure, if they can do it in a cost-effective and profitable way. The key thing is, can they maintain their margins?
Yeah, I think that Facebook is wanting to be in the bargain area, right? They want to be there when you get your first phone, even if it's just a feature phone, or not even, even if it's a dumb phone. They have those SIM cards. They have these other Facebook programs where you can access Facebook over WAP. So, you know, if they're working with a partnership with Apple, getting on the cheaper version of the iPhone might make sense. I just don't ever see Apple surrendering that kind of control to any app. They're not going to give up the home screen or the way things work. Now, I don't know. Maybe the next version, iOS 7, has some crazy new feature in it that makes room for that sort of thing, but I doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it too. And also, you know, if your first customers who buy your cheap phones and may someday upgrade, you want to train them to use your current interface, not to have to adopt something new if they move up the chain.
I mean, I guess the only way that we could all be wrong is if for some reason Facebook Home is such a wild success, you know, everybody wants it type of thing. But that's not even really how I see the enthusiasm on the Android side. People go, oh, it's very interesting. Interesting. Yeah, but it still requires so much emphasis on Facebook. And I just don't think that many people, particularly people on iOS, want that experience.
Yeah, it's not faring very well on Google Play, by the way. This is an article, I think, from, you know, a few days ago, but the one-star votes have been incredibly out of this world compared to any of the other star levels on Google Play. So even on the Android world, people kind of see it as a curiosity, but not much more than that, you know?
It's not meant for the Android world.
No, totally.
Yeah, that's what that shows me, is mm-hmm. And we all kind of knew that. Facebook wants this to be sold on a phone to a person who loves Facebook. It's a different market. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Let's move on to Xiaomi, X-I-A-O-M-I, Chinese phone company, smartphone company, that gave a talk at All Things D, kind of raising awareness the fact that they exist. They're a huge smartphone company in China. Lin Bin is president and one of many co-founders. Speaking at D-Dive into Mobile, he said that the company just released their first smartphone in August 2011, so just about 3 years in business, just under, with no sales, no marketing, and no sales meaning like no discount sales, no marketing sales, no retail. They priced their phone at bill of materials. That means at cost. They've made $2 billion in revenue on 7.1 million phones. In 2013, they hope to ship 15 million handsets. And these are not bargain phones. These are super phones, high-end Android phones, quad-core phones. You can get them for less than $400 or the equivalent of $400 US. For example, the Mi 2 is one of their most popular. Quad-core Qualcomm Snapdragon S4. That's the same processor that's in the Samsung Galaxy S4 and an Adreno 320 GPU. They say they're going to make their money off of services and selling accessories. And he used colored batteries as an example. And then Ina Fried made some jokes about Android battery life, which he's like, yeah, you're kind of right. They're just now announcing that they're going to expand to Taiwan and Hong Kong. They also have a TV box that they're selling in China. Taiwan and Hong Kong are kind of a step for them to see, like, okay, what can we exist in a more Western model of carriers selling the phones? Right now, they just put the phone online and they sell out. And they're kind of a desirable brand in China. Sarah, is this intriguing to you as it is to me that there's this kind of Apple-like fervor because they limit the number, and yet they don't do any sales and marketing, and people are dying for their phones. They sell out every time they put one up.
I mean, is that what it is? It's just a get it while it's hot because you snooze, you lose type of a thing, and that creates sellouts. I mean, it's so surprising to me, not, you know, just that we haven't heard of this company, or a lot of people haven't heard of this company, but that the revenue is so high considering no marketing, you know, and you can't walk into a store. I mean, is it all word of mouth?
I guess it must be. It must be just social networking, word of mouth, internet buzz. But yeah, I mean, cheap prices for really high quality phones, no contract. You're just, mm-hmm. you know, you're paying less than $400. That's pretty attractive, don't you think, Lloyd?
Now, I'm assuming they're not a provider, right? They're not a carrier. They're just selling the hardware. So, yeah, that's very attractive. You mean buying an unlocked phone for a very low cost? And I can totally see them making money off of accessories and even apps. I'm not so sure about the app side, but I don't know but accessories tend to be very high margin, particularly if they're useful. So I could see it happening. And if you look at a software model on the taking a look at a completely different application model, the free-to-play game model where they're making all their money off of in-app purchases and stuff, I could see this working for hardware like this, particularly mobile hardware.
If I were T-Mobile USA, I'd be giving these guys a call saying, hey, this would be the perfect match for us. Or Ting. Ting should be calling these guys as well.
It's a good way to look at huge marketing and sales budgets as not necessarily the best way to get the phones in as many hands as possible. You know, a little bit more like under the radar. Let's create a false sense of urgency here. Yep. Well, I guess it's a real sense of urgency if there actually is a finite number of phones, but kind of get the fever going, and you make money with perhaps. A lot fewer employees.
They've got 2,400 employees at Xiaomi.
Well, what are they all doing?
They're making phones.
Making money.
Yeah, they're making money. But then all these, these are high quality phones. Yeah. In fact, they just started outsourcing to Foxconn this year, apparently. They were building the phones themselves up until then, designing them themselves. So it's an interesting company to watch. They got a lot of buzz yesterday at D-Dive into Mobile because of this attractive thing of really high-end phones at a really low cost. It'll be interesting to see if they can keep it going or not. Let's finish up with some numbers about the social networks that are taking over for Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, so this is interesting stuff. CEO Jan Koum, who's the CEO of WhatsApp, which is an app that I'm just going to have to start using because that's all I hear about. I was on stage at D-Mobile today and says hundreds of millions of users are sending as many as 18 billion messages per day, and that puts WhatsApp as bigger than Twitter. Twitter officially claims about 200 million monthly active users. WhatsApp is processing 8 billion inbound messages and 12 billion outbound messages in that same time period. And then a kind of interesting statistic. In Spain alone, 98% of smartphone users apparently are active WhatsApp users. So huge, huge, huge market in particular countries. Koum went on to deny that the company was interested in selling to Facebook and Google, and pretty much said, don't believe the hype, when it comes to the idea that all we're looking to do is sell for a really high number to one of these other companies. We're already huge. We're bigger than Twitter. Some crazy growth. Another company that has been experiencing really, really rapid growth is Snapchat. Snapchat CEO and co-founder Evan Spiegel has said that Snapchat users are uploading 150 million images per day, which is a huge growth even since October when the company was processing about 20 million a day. So from 20 million to 150 million in 6 months. If you compare that to something like Instagram that uploads about 40 million images per day, you figure, well, that's interesting. Then again, Snapchat is a completely different model. I mean, a lot of this is throwaway stuff, right? Uploading something to Snapchat, you assume most of the time goes away after 10 seconds. It's not like an Instagram image where maybe we're putting a lot of thought and effort into something that a lot of people will see and like. Although Spiegel also said, Facebook introduced Facebook Poke, which has Snapchat-like capability in December, and Facebook's known to do this. When something's popular, Facebook creates a clone. He says it was the best Christmas present ever. Meaning it kind of just proved the model for what Snapchat's already doing. It looks like their growth is showing no signs of slowing. Lloyd, are you using WhatsApp and Snapchat?
I'm not a user, but I've been following Snapchat with a lot of interest, mainly because of its ephemeral nature. The fact that people are kind of getting tired of these services like Facebook and Twitter holding onto posts and using them to data mine, and whereas the Snapchat, you post a picture and it disappears after a while. And so you don't have to worry about it being there forever for somebody else to use. So I think that's a lot of interest in that sort of thing. And with all the concerns about privacy and other things like that. Snapchat's very interesting. WhatsApp, I'm not so sure. I mean, it's a messaging app. Are there any numbers as to how popular it is in the U.S. market, for example?
Well, not as I don't have specific numbers in front of me, but certainly not as popular as in other countries. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to kind of get my head around too, Lloyd, is it's a messaging app. It's a cross-platform messaging app. I've got some friends who are using it, but not a lot. Tom, I'm not sure what it is about WhatsApp that makes it so popular in certain markets.
I thought that you were just ignoring me on WhatsApp. I didn't realize you weren't using it. I send you all those messages, the emojis that I buy.
Is that what you like about it? The emojis.
Well, and people in the chat room are like, "What's their business model?" And for WhatsApp and apps like that, like Line, it's in-app purchases, and they're making it. That makes more sense to me than what Twitter's business model might be. Twitter has to do some. They've done it, but they have to do some real, circumlocutions or permutations or some big long word like that to figure out how to make money. This is it. You like, hey, you want to send a sticker to your friend? Give us 50 cents, and people do it. I think that's what it is people don't want to be bogged down with managing a social network. As silly as that may sound to some people, they just want to talk to their friends. And that's what this does. And it does it in a better way than SMS. SMS is just the text. This gives you lots of bells and whistles.
Or wills.
I like bessels.
That's why it's so cool, the bessels.
All the bessels are really what's the business model is built on. Snapchat, I think the allure there is that, I can say something and it won't be stored. And that's so different than Facebook, which stores things forever.
Right. And actually, if you think about it in another way, from Snapchat's perspective, that reduces their cost to operate, right? They don't have to keep the stuff on servers forever. So they don't have to have server farms as large as Facebook or Twitter need to keep.
That's a really good point. I didn't think about the run rate is lower, huh? Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff. All right. If you think that, we're talking about Snapchat and WhatsApp, you're like, that's a young person's game. I want to see what the wise people are up to, what those who've lived life and seen life are up to. Let's look at the randomizer. Because game developer Matt Ricks brought an Oculus Rift rig to his 90-year-old grandmother, had her put it on, and the results are just fun to watch. I'm honestly watching anybody with Oculus Rift is pretty fun, but his grandmother is particularly entertaining in her reactions.
Oh my.
Does it look like legit 3D?
Oh, it looks like the sun is coming up.
Hi guys.
Hey Judy.
How are you?
Oh, this is something else, and I'm still sitting where I was.
Yep.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah, can we move her some more thing?
Yeah, move her close to something.
If I ever explain this to somebody, they won't believe me.
Pretty much, honestly.
They won't believe me.
Move her next to that post.
I'm going to do the post again. All right. I'm not going to make you...
Oh, man!
Sitsu, can you...
I thought you were going to put me through the window, not hit me against the post.
Sitsu, can you reach out and touch the post?
What's that again?
Doesn't it feel like you can reach out and touch the post?
You bet your bottom dollar you can. And I can't get over the leaves moving.
And she absolutely enjoyed it. Now, it gets funny. Towards the end, you can tell she's, like, tired of wearing it on her head, and she wants to take it off. But Oculus Rift, man, we don't talk about it as much as maybe we should on this show, but it is, by all accounts, and I haven't tried it yet, incredibly impressive. Lloyd, have you got a chance to try it?
I've tried demos of it, and it is quite impressive. I was a little disappointed in the developer version being scaled back a little bit in terms of their hardware. But the final version they're going to work on is going to be pretty cool because it'll have the smaller screen again, which means it'll be lighter in weight. But it is a pretty neat experience when you try it for the first time.
Yeah, it's incredible to watch this reaction. Sarah, doesn't this put a smile on your face?
It really does, especially since... I was always, trying to show my grandma, like, look, I just took a picture of you. Look at it. And her reaction was always one of, like, confused anger. What is that? It's just like, it was so hard for her to understand how this stuff was possible that she just, get it away. It's bad. So I like the fact that Cynthia, I think her name was, is having a good time. She seemed like she was having a good time.
It did. Yeah. She thought she was in Tuscany for a while, which is, and I don't mean like she didn't know where she was for real. She just, that's how good it is. take a quick break and thank our other sponsor for today's show, ShareFile by Citrix. It's not only what we do at work, it's how we do our work that matters. And our flow of information these days is a challenge to keep up with. You want to make sure it flows, first of all. You want to make sure it's collaborative. You're getting everybody's important information in. But you want to make it efficient, not sitting there listening to everybody go on or forwarding things around. Whether you're working at the office or on the go, ShareFile helps you do all of that easily and securely. ShareFile by Citrix seamlessly integrates into your daily routine, no matter where you are, from any mobile device. With ShareFile, you can send files of almost any size as secure links. And then you get a notification when they're opened, so you know that the progress is happening. People are looking at the files you've sent them. You can password protect them to make sure that only the people with the password can get in. Plus, you can set up shared folders for easy collaboration with not only your coworkers, but your clients as well. ShareFile really will change the work. To help you get started, we have a special 30-day free trial offer, no obligation, and you'll see the difference right away. Get our special offer. Go to ShareFile.com today. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and enter TNT. That's ShareFile.com. Type in TNT. Change the way you work today with ShareFile.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Got a lot of stuff on the calendar today, Sarah.
Yeah, we sure do. AT&T's Galaxy S4 page is listing April 30th as the ship date for $199 or $639 price for the 16 gigabyte. The Demo Mobile conference is tomorrow, April 17th in San Francisco. Also tomorrow is Paid Content 2013 conference in New York City. eBay earnings report is tomorrow as well. It's a big day on the 17th. And the first Facebook Home update is coming the second week of May, and it'll be available outside the U.S. starting later today. And that does fall in line with what Facebook had said at their event, that they're going to be rolling out monthly updates rather than something that's annual or less frequent. And finally, Firefox Mobile OS is launching in 5 countries this summer: Venezuela, Poland, Brazil, Portugal, and Spain.
All right, let's finish up with something that's incoming. Got an email from Alan. Says, I personally wouldn't begrudge a company leveraging their success in one sector to bootstrap another line of business, but I wonder if Google doesn't need to be extremely careful in dealing with the EU. The current settlement seems a little silly to me, sort of like making Budweiser include a can of Miller Lite in every 24-pack because it's somehow fairer. He goes on to talk about how the EU has been very monopoly hostile. Especially North American companies. Hollywood and Microsoft both had issues. While the particulars of the situation are not the same, it doesn't take much imagination to envision some technocrat in Brussels demanding Google break up into separate companies because they so dominate the, quote, public utility of search, using the arguments of net neutrality and dumb pipes. If they aren't happy with Google's settlement implementation, they might do this. Lloyd, do you think Google has to worry about this? Or did you follow this settlement that Google has proposed?
I haven't followed the details of the settlement, but the EU has classically been very strict about these kinds of things. And, I mean, Google hasn't been the only target, obviously. Microsoft has. Other companies have. So I think that they need to be pretty careful. The EU is getting actually even more strict over time over these issues, much more so than the U.S. market.
Yeah, and I like his analogy, too, of because the settlement is essentially that in some cases Google has to show 3 links to competitors' products whenever Google wants to show their own product in a listing. And it is kind of like including a can of Miller Lite in every 24-pack of Budweiser. Which, like, I don't know. If that made it a 25-pack, I might not be so against it.
Yeah, but remember the settlement of the EU where Microsoft had to include links to other browser installs?
Right, exactly.
It was a very similar situation.
All right. Well, that is about it for us. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. And Lloyd, thank you so much for joining us today. Let folks know where they can find your work, what you're up to.
You can find me always on Twitter, just at Lloyd Case. And I'm writing for sites like Tested.com as well.
Lloyd Case, that's 1LLOYDCASE, if you want to follow him on Twitter. Also, don't forget about our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com is a place where you guys can tell us what stories you'd like us to cover. It's very helpful in figuring out what we're going to put in the show each day, because you can not only submit links, but you can vote them up and vote them down. That's really where it gets helpful, is when people do a lot of votes. We see a lot of votes going for something up, or if we see people kind of battling, like, nah, push that one down. It's always interesting to see that stuff. technewstoday.reddit.com. TwitNet.com. You can find us always on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is TNT@twit.tv. And give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Marshall Patrick, CEO of Get Little Bird, joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.